Hi, I'm Laura. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Good morning. Ellie, thank you for asking me to share. I'm going to sit because I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm just not going to be able to stand the whole time, so I'm just going to start by sitting. I'm really, really grateful to be here, and I have a new work schedule, so I can't come to this meeting, and it's really great to come back and to be greeted by so many, like, love, so many, like, kisses and hugs, because I got abstinent coming to these meetings. And it's really, really good to be back. And I'm totally nervous, and I told Janet this morning, I was like, I'd rather be nervous, like, still, than to, like, think I've got this thing, right? And they're like, oh, I'm going to be great, you know? And it's like, no, like, I got to be humble and just tell you my story. And so to qualify, I have 5 years and 5 months of abstinence, and I'm down 60 pounds, and I work with staff, and that is how I have, like, been able to keep what I've got. So I think I was born a compulsive, I'm going to knock my water over, this is going to be an epic fail. I think I was born a compulsive overeater, though I don't know that for sure, I don't have no proof, but I was just always obsessed with your body and my body and what you thought about my body, and I was just obsessed with bodies. And mine was never good enough, and yours surely wasn't good enough, but if your stomach was smaller, then, like, then you were better than me. And that is really, like, where I got off on those thoughts. And I know that, like, it's a mental obsession, because it didn't start out for me with the food at, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. I didn't pick up the food compulsively until I was about 13. So I just know that I have a mental obsession, and I'm constantly obsessed. You know, it's like I'm ruined by my thoughts, and, like, the relief that I get here is that I don't have to live in my thoughts today. So I think that was really what was so paramount. I was just always really uncomfortable in my skin. I remember, like, when my mom and my best friend's mom, like, when we started getting boobs, they called them buds, which I thought was horrifying. It's so embarrassing. I was like, don't talk about my buds, you know? And I had to wear a training bra, and I was so upset. You know, I was just pissed. And I just felt, like, mad at the world that, like, my body was changing. And then someone noticed, because I have the disease of, you know, for me, I really identify with, I want you to think I'm the best, but, like, please stay away. Like, don't touch me. And, like, that's, you know, the disease of isolation and, like, wanting to be kept back. So, but really wanting attention. So it's very dueling. So I think I, you know, I'm like, I love this story. I tell it every time I share. When I was, I think I was, like, 5 or 6, I have 2 older sisters and a little brother, but he wasn't born at the time. Actually, he was, because he was born when I was 4. Okay, so we had a mudslide in the back of our yard when the rain would come in. And so my mom would always send me and my sisters out there to make, like, fake mud pies. And my sisters would, like, big little pie pans, and they wouldn't try to eat what looked like a chocolate pie, but I always tried to eat the mud pie. And my mom would have to, like, rip dirt out of my mouth and, like, wash my mouth, and it was, like, this big thing. And nobody else did that. And so even though I didn't, you know, remember picking up the food, it was like I was just obsessed. And it looks like chocolate, so I'm going to eat it. And there's all these little pictures of me just, like, everyone's smiling and, like, I'm literally in the food as a child. So, but I remember picking up the food. And I'll say this, that, like, I'm not a compulsive overeater because of anything that has happened to me. Like, I had a really good childhood. I have a really good relationship with my family still today. So I know that, like, I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. But when I was sexually assaulted, like, that is when I remember picking up the food. I made a conscious decision. I was sitting in the therapy class, and I picked up this honey bun, and I said to it, you're going to solve all my problems. And I just kept eating, and I didn't stop until I got to these rooms. And, like, ugh, honey buns now. Like, really? Like, that would save the day, you know, when I was 14, a honey bun. And we would just sit in these, like, stupid therapy. I mean, I love therapy today, but, like, back when I was 14, it was not cool. But I got to leave school for 1 hour. I got to leave classes for 1 hour. And I didn't care about therapy, what we were talking about. I just got to eat compulsively in that. And I knew that, like, because literally they would take us out of class, they would send us to the cafeteria to get whatever we wanted on the school's money, and then we would go into therapy. And I just remember eating the entire time. And I packed on probably, like, 50 or 60 pounds my freshman year of high school. And my one of my teachers pulled me aside, and she said, what is going on? You know, like, what happened to you? And I just remember sitting on the steps with her, just saying, this is England. I just said, I don't know, you know, but I can't. I heard that I can't stop, but I knew that I couldn't stop. And so I just felt really like it was just going to solve the day, like, solve all my problems. And then when I was, let's see, when I was 15, my friends, I went to church. I grew up in church camp every summer, and when I was sent away at 13 for 2 weeks, and it was fun and great. And then when I was 15, I went back for that summer, and my friend called and she was like, I really want to lose weight for church camp. And I was like, great, me too. I'm a horrible dieter. I can't diet. I don't diet. I don't lose weight on them. And she said, let's just stop eating. And I said, that's a brilliant idea. Let's just stop eating. And I know that I'm a compulsive eater because every bad idea, I think, is a brilliant idea. But this is good information. Like, great. And I stopped eating for 9 weeks, and she stopped eating for 3 days. And I just really have self-will when it comes to manipulation and control. And I was lying to everyone. I was lying to my family. I was just a liar. And when you're not eating, I mean, I would have, like, 3 or 4... like 5 naps, like raisins a week. I was over-exercising. I was in tanning beds. My mom would, like, we had a routine. Like, I was not driving yet, and so my mom would pick me up from work. And, like, I just felt so horrible for the torture I put her through. My mom would pick me up from work, and she, at lunchtime, she would ask if I had eaten, and I said, yes, you know, why? And then she would take me to the gym, and my sister taught me to saran wrap my waist, another horrible idea that I thought was brilliant. So I would saran wrap my waist and my arms and my body and, like, go exercise. And I would sometimes pass out, like, on the treadmill, like, kind of, like, nod off. And then I would walk over, or my mom would drive me over to the tanning salon, and I would stand in this, like, tanning bed that you, like, hold your arms up. And I would just pass out and black out and, like, come to by, like, hitting my head on the tanning bed. It's like, this is completely unmanageable. And they didn't know what was going on. And, like, I look back at that, like, because I lied. Like, I'm just really good at lying. Not today. I have a horrible conscience. Horrible guilty conscience today. But at the time, I was really good at lying. And so that's what was going on. And I was over, so I dropped about, like, I don't know, 60 pounds, starving myself maybe, and I got into a car accident because, you know, it's like if you're an alcoholic, like, you drink and drive, but if you are a compulsive overeater, you get in car accidents because you're high on food or you're high because you haven't eaten. And I got into a car accident, and that's where I kind of woke up, and my parents brought me home, like, everything was fine. And I just started screaming and crying and, like, begging for help and just saying, like, I haven't eaten in weeks. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm miserable. Like, I need help. And so they started monitoring my food. And so then I started eating again and gained some of the weight back. And so that was, you know, high school. And then I started doing diet pills. You know, it's like the same story a lot of us have. And getting off on diet pills. And then I moved to Chicago when I was 18, and I felt free for the first time. My mom, my family, my dad, like, nobody was, you know, on my back. I felt free. And free for me was just eating compulsively the entire time. I packed on another, like, 40 or 50 pounds in a few months. And, you know, looking back, like, I really had a good time. Chicago was great. Like, I was on my own. The economy hadn't hit. I had a lot of money in my dad's car. Like, I was just having a blast. Not going to class. a lot of the times I wasn't going to class because I didn't think I was good enough. Like, I didn't like my outfit. I couldn't show up on time. You know, just complete unmanageability. And then what happened is, you know, it was like a slow start into here. Because I got here when I was 21 and 27 today. So I've really grown up in these rooms, which I'm so grateful for. Like, even when I have crappy days, it's like I have grown up in the 12 steps. And that is, I see it today as like a huge gift. So while I'm sitting, I got rheumatoid arthritis when I was 18. And I, it came on really, really sudden. And I think for me at the time, you know, I was really upset and I was horrible. But looking back, it's like it's been a 9-year journey. And I just realized, like, I didn't take care of anyone. I didn't take care of myself. I just always took care of other people. And so when I got RA, like, I really had to step it up for myself. And it was this, so I got RA and I moved back home and I couldn't continue college because I was so sick. And I packed on more weight. My top weight is 222. I didn't want to weigh after that. That was, like, enough for me. And then I moved to LA when I was, I love how it's like my story, I'm trying to like figure a thing. I moved to LA in January of 2006, and because of the RA, I went on a really strict diet from my nutritionist, and I was really willing because I just couldn't move. And I was in so much pain. And so I lost like 75 pounds in 4 months. And that was just a drastic amount of weight. And I was really angry because I was getting a lot of attention and I didn't know how to handle it because I couldn't eat. I couldn't stuff my feelings. So I started drinking, like Starbucks 7 times a day, literally. And it was out of control. And then my friend told me, so I lost the weight and then I packed it back on. And like a year and a half into that, she told me about OA. And I was like, you should totally go to that. Like, your portions are crazy. And I'm thin, so I'm good, you know? And what I've learned here is, like, I'm not at my smallest size right now. I'm 20 pounds up from my smallest size. But I've never been more comfortable in my body as I am today. And when I came here, I was like, you know, I just wanted to relieve the insanity in my head. So 6 months later, after I packed on like another 20 pounds, my boyfriend kept catching me in like food binges. There was this one time we were away at church camp, and we were both on staff, and he came back to the hotel room where we were staying, and I had eaten all the donuts that he had just bought, and he just looked at me and he said, "What happened?" And I said, "I ate them." Like, I didn't know what to say. Like, I couldn't lie. I couldn't be like, oh, rats, you know, or someone at the end. You know? So all these things just kept happening where I just had to keep saying, like, I ate it. You know? Like, I can't stop. Like, I don't know what to say for myself. And just felt like that look, you know? If anything, to never get that look again is, like, enough to keep me here. You know? Like, oh, I've had it from so many people. And so 6 months later, here we go. My friend told me about OA again, Overeaters Anonymous, and this bomb went off. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I need that. That's what I have to go and do. So I went to the local police meeting at 6 p.m. on Friday night, and because I lived in Hollywood for the first, like, I don't know, 4 months of my abstinence. And actually, I wasn't abstinent yet because it took me 4 months. So I went to that meeting, and there was somebody sitting in the corner who was bulimic, and I sat next to somebody who was like 535 pounds or something like that. And I came in late, of course, because I didn't know how to be on time. I just didn't care. You know, I was just like, whatever. And they were reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard the word alcohol, and I, like, gasped. In the meeting, and I was like, "Is this okay?" You know, and he was like, "Yes, we're just reading the big book." And I was like, "Okay," and I just like grabbed my heart, and I was like, "Ah." And he was like, "You know, welcome." And I'll just never forget that look he gave me. And And that was Bernard, if anyone knows Bernard, and he is so dear to me. And I went to meetings for 4 months, and I just binged. I just couldn't. I heard the message. People told me to keep coming back, and I was not going to let go of the food. I was not ready to stop eating compulsively. I was binging all the time. My roommate started catching me in the middle of the night. She would wake up at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I'd be on a food binge. And she would call me and say, where are you? And I was like, I'm at CVS getting water. And she then I have to go get water from CVS when I'm at Arby's, you know. And I was pissed, you know. And I'd have to come in, like, hiding my food and walk in with water, you know. She's like, why do you need water at 2 in the morning? I was like, don't bother me, you know. And gratefully, I got to make amends to her about a month ago. And that was a really powerful event to look somebody in the eyes and... because she knows the hell I put her through. And I always thought it was her fault. And this program gives me the ability to look at my part. And I had a huge part in ruining that relationship. Because I really did put us through, like, turmoil. So I just kept going to meetings. And then I came to the log cabin meeting on Tuesday night. It was a big book study. And this guy asked me to carry the books one week, and he said, can you come back next week and bring the book and slowly get 30 days? And I was like, okay, great. You know, so like when I don't want to do something, like I remember service is what got me abstinent, and service is what's going to keep me abstinent. And I came back the following week, and I, you know, had 7 days, and then I came back, you know, the next week and had 14 days, and, you know, I just kept getting days. And that's really what happened for me. And I didn't want to get a sponsor. I didn't, you know, I get really, you know, nowadays I tell my sponsees or I tell, you know, anyone, it's like, you know, don't look for someone who has what you want, just my opinion. Look for somebody who you can be rigorously honest with and who will take you through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, because that's what counts, you know. When I came here, my perception was completely off, you know, like I want someone thin and pretty and this and that and have a husband and dogs and da da da, you know, and that's not what I got. This woman came up to me, and she was quirky and funny and pretty, and everyone loved her in the meeting, and I was like, ugh, you know, and I just ran out of the meeting, and she came up to me, and she's like, I'll sponsor you, and I was like, oh, thanks, you know, and she's like, here's my number, and I was so upset at her, you know, because she had everything I wanted, but I didn't know how to achieve that, because that's not who I was, you know, when I came in here, and she has since relapsed. A lot of my sponsors have relapsed, and that sucks, like, going through that. And so I'm really grateful to be here. It's like my feet are trained even when I don't want to show up for certain things. You know, I know that this is, gives me the life that I have today. So she took me through the steps the first, like, 2 years, and it was amazing. And then I parted ways. And so, you know, what it's like today is really different than, you know, 6 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago. And I was thinking, like, last night I've been on a gratitude list for probably about 4 years, so shout out to the gratitude list when they listen to the podcast, hopefully. I was writing that all that is asked of me in these 12 steps is that I be of service. Like, I literally get to keep the life I have today if I'm of service. And that means asking my colleague to switch shifts with me today at work so that I can leave here and then have brunch with Carol and then go to work, you know? And when I got here, I was not employable. I was flunking out of college. I did not have a job. I didn't go to class. I was a wreck. I was lying and stealing. And today, like, I have a job, and I have a good job that I've worked hard for. And I only have that job because I took sponsor direction. Because she literally, like, I've been in one field for like 3.5 years, and it was just exhausting, and I couldn't keep up, and I couldn't handle it. And my body kind of finally said, like, enough is enough. And so we were looking on Craigslist together, and it was paid $10 an hour. And I said, she said, why don't you apply to this job? It sounds great. And I was like, I'm not going to apply to a $10 an hour job. Like, I got bills to pay and this to pay. And I don't apply to anything that's like less than 15 or 17. And she goes, apply to this job. And I was like, okay, you know? And I applied, and I got the job. And y'all, at 27, I did not think I was going to be working for $10 an hour, okay? And I've never been happier, you know what I mean? And it's all my perception. And it's just, for me, it's like being willing to say, like, hey, Dad, like, I paid all my bills, I paid this, I paid that, but I don't have enough money for food and gas. Can you spot me? And he's like, absolutely, you know? Because he sees how hard I'm working to achieve, like, where I want to be. But just for today, like, I can humbly sit here and say, like, that's where I am. And I'm grateful to be here. You know, and I have my own personal business where I make money, but I am not financially supporting myself that right now on that. But it's steady income, and so I'm just learning. It's like I feel like the longer I'm here, I learn to be like a worker among workers. And I learn, like, for me, like, one of my biggest character defects is jealousy, and I'm less than. Like, I constantly compare myself. And my sponsor reminds me all the time that I just, like, you don't get to compare yourself to other people, you know? And if you're jealous, you're jealous because you're unwilling to do the work to get what you want, you know? And she told me that a few weeks ago, and that's done. And I was, oh, it was like a few months ago, and I was like, okay, great. So then I started doing new actions to, like, get what I want, you know? And, like, you know, I work the steps, so I'm on step 9, and I'm making amends. And I heard about the amends for a long time in the rooms, and I got to them. Some of them have been incredible, like, just amazing. And I'll wrap up. And some of them are, like, it just feels like a checklist. Like, do I really have to do this, you know? And then my sponsor just reminds me, like, this is how it's asked. Like, just keep doing it. And so last week I sent a friend, in our friendship, I had borrowed like $3,000 from him over the course of time. And I got to send him like a small deposit and a breakdown of how I'll pay you back and what I'm willing to pay you back and by the date. So like by the 15th of every month, I sent him $20 with a little note. But I sent him this long note and explaining, like, you know, and apologizing and saying, like, I'm sorry that, like, I avoided you sometimes because I was unwilling to pay you back because I was scared. And his response and a lot of people's response have been, like, wow, that is so great that you get the opportunity to do this. You know, like, that's so courageous of you, and thank you. And then I've had to send ex-boyfriends letters. I wanted to see them. I was not allowed to see them. And I have to make living amends to some people. So, you know, just keep doing this. Like, this is a really good deal, and this is a really good life. And I'm really grateful that I was given the gift of abstinence and that I just get to keep doing it. And, you know, for me, it's like I said, like, my feet are trained. I show up when I, like, no matter what, even when I don't feel like it. Although I did love to come this morning, so I'll be back. But lately I've been, like, annoyed at OA, but I keep doing it, you know? And that's new for me, so I should explore that feeling. So, does anyone have any questions?
Hi, thank you. You mentioned that your parents, your family didn't have anything to do with you being a compulsive reader, that you just believed you were born that way. Did you come in thinking that? And if you didn't, did the fourth and fifth step kind of help turn that attitude?
Okay, so the question is, I didn't believe that my family had anything to do with me being a compulsive overeater, but did I think that when I first came in?
And did you blame
them? And did I blame them? Thanks for the question. I think that, I had a lot of blame on them, but I was really angry at them for trying to control my food, more than thinking that they were the reason. Because I was an overweight child, they were really concerned about me, and I felt that they didn't have, of course, I felt like they didn't know how to parent. You know, I've never been a parent, so I, like, now have a lot of compassion for my parents. And now today I see that they were really scared for their kids. And yes, in the fourth and fifth step, yeah, I get to look at my part, like this one incident with my mom when she thought that she knew that I had taken Oreos from the home, which was my brother's, but I had, like, gone into the stash. And she was asking me all about it, and then you know, I was like, I got them from school. And then after like 30 minutes, I was like, fine, take them back. And she was like, see, you were lying. You know, and it's like, as a parent, I think she just didn't want me to lie to her. But yeah, like the fourth and fifth step, like uncover, like, you know, my part. But I really don't think that they were the reason I am a compulsive reader. So yeah, thank you for the question.
Thank you, Laura. What does self-care look like for you today?
Okay, what does self-care look like for me today? I just have to laugh because one of my sponsors like hates that word. And so I like try sometimes, I'm like, what else can I use? But it's like, it's self-care, you know? Self-care is definitely checking in with a sponsor first when something, like, you know, getting like a new job, the first month, like probably the first like 4 to 6 weeks, because I have rheumatoid arthritis and a couple other health issues, I went to work and came home and slept. That's it. And went to meetings. That's what I had energy for. And so it's not overdoing it. Self-care for me is really taking care of my body and accepting that to the degree that I have to take care of my body is different for other people. You know, last night at work, like, I was just about to I wanted to cry myself to sleep last night and cry leaving work because I'm so tired. And that is a good indication that, like, this past week, you didn't get enough sleep. So for me, it's really taking care of my body because of the health issue. So that might be different for someone else. And going to meetings, you know, like, I have two committed meetings. I've had three, like, my sponsor, when I came here, she said 3 meetings minimum. But before I was in another fellowship as well, then I went to 5 OA meetings. But now that I do 3 in the other program and 3 here, it's like you balance it. So for me, it's like taking care of my body, getting enough sleep, sending my food every night, exercising. And I think like the things that like normal people do. You know, and like, so sometimes like when I don't know what to do, like I look at my housemate because she's totally normal. I'm like, what's the Mallory do? Yeah. You know, and sometimes I ask her like, hey, how does this portion look to you? And she's like, it's good, it's normal, cool. You know, so I think it's a lot of it is just asking for help as well because I just don't know what's best for me. Thank you.
You mentioned your the eating. Now, what does your food look like today? How do you define, you know, what is where your action is required versus what is just the will of the world. So, like, your food, what does it look like today?
Okay.
And how is that?
What does my food look like today is the question. It, like, most times I look down at my food and I'm like, are you for real? How is this possible? Like, because I am... When I'm in my disease, when I was, like, I eat really gross things. Like, I'm, like, a dirty eater. I am. You know, I wake up with donuts in my face. And I want, like, big, disgusting meals. oh, my gosh. I have, like, that is the difference between me and some of my other compulsive overeating friends. I still love this, like, smell of McDonald's. They're like, ew. But I do. And today my food, like... it's really clean. And so clean for me is I really listen to my body. I'm also like just naturally very intuitive, and that has really helped me with my food. So I stopped eating meat a few months ago because like one day I literally was just like, I don't feel like eating meat today. And I was like, okay, I'm not gonna question it. I just don't feel like eating it. And now when I eat meat, I get a stomach ache and I get acid reflux. So I eat a lot of vegetables. I eat salad. I make like lots of veggies, like stir fry. And it's just a miracle. If you're struggling with the food, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards. But it is, you know, 3 meals a day is really what I aim for. And, you know, I don't skip meals. And I say aim for because sometimes my time management that I'm still working on, it's gotten a lot better, but sometimes, you know, I push a meal back because, you know, I'm unwilling to stop and eat lunch, you know, because I don't want to be in more traffic and I'd want to just get home quicker. So So those are things that I turn over to my sponsor and I say, like, you know, I ate lunch at 3 o'clock today. That's an inappropriate time to eat lunch. Like, those are things I have to work on. I try to eat between, like, 12 and 2 and eat between appropriate times. So, thank you. Terrell. It sounded like I did. So the question is, it sounded like I had anger before I came into OA, and do I have anger today? And if I do, how do I take care of that? I love that question, and thank you, because anger for me is one of the most uncomfortable feelings. I hate it. It's not something I handle well, and I judge it tremendously. But the other day, I started a meeting back in April, and we got a lot of newcomers, and so we couldn't make rent for 2 weeks, and I had to close the meeting. And I was pissed. I was so angry. And I felt bad, you know, but it's like, I have a right. I worked really hard. I tried. You know, my sponsor reminded me, like, you're human. You did your best. And you made a bunch of calls to other compulsive overeaters, and they reminded me, like, you're entitled to this feeling, but you just can't marinate in it. You know, like, that's what I don't get to do today. I do not get to marinate in my angry feelings. And I get to, like, immediately make a call. Because when I make that call, I get a new perspective of it. And sometimes they'll tell me to do some writing about it. But usually my sponsor just kind of shuts me up. Or my fellows do. Or, like, when I'm frustrated with something, like, the best medicine for me is, like, a friend, like, laughing in my face over my problems, you know, to get me right sized. So, usually I just need someone to laugh in my face and be like, get over yourself. That is the best thing for me. Because I'm just, like, so off of my perspective. And I just constantly need, like, a new look, a relook at something. So, thanks for the question. Carol.
Thank you, Laura. Can you talk a little bit about your spirituality and how on a
daily
basis you
align with the will of God? Oh, yeah, like, are you saying I do? what's my spiritual life like, and do I align my will? How do I align my will with God? Okay. I'm doing a lot better repeating the question. I'm also dyslexic, so I'm really impressed with myself right now. Like, this is always a struggle for me. So, like, I'm like, what am I hearing? So my favorite line in the entire big book, ready for it? 83. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We do not crawl before anyone. That, to me, is, like, the best line. Because that is what keeps me spiritual. I constantly want to compare myself to other people. And that takes me away from God. And I constantly want to be jealous of what you have and I don't have. And then I get to, like, remember, like, that's just not cool for you. So for me, I'm such a visual learner that if I literally remember that I do not bow before anyone and it's just me and God, then I feel like I get to be right-sized. And also spiritually, I have gotten on my knees every night, no matter what, even when my mom's laying in bed with me or someone else, because my family always comes to visit, which is a great thing, I get on my knees and I say three things. And I heard a great speaker say this, so I'm not going to try to steal it, claim it, I should say. Surprise me, God. Lead me where you lead me. Thank you, Father. And then I say those three things every single night, like multiple times a night on my knees. And I try to read, my sponsor encourages me to read pages 83 to 88 every day. And I've recently started meditating because the other day I was just so disproportionate in my feelings. I was crying and exhausted, this and that. And she was like, just meditate in the morning. Just sit with God, you know? And that's her answer to things. It's not like, go do this or go do that. She's like, your feelings are valid, but just sit. You know, because when I do that, then I'm less disproportionate in my head. And just constantly reading that line and reading pages. And then, like, the little Voices of Recovery and other things that I do. So
And I don't do it perfectly, I just do it. So thanks for the question. Robin, did you, somebody raise your hand? Anyone else? Oh yeah, in the back.
How did you find that? When you said you were coming for several months, and then how did you actually get asked?
How did I get asked in this? I was a service. Somebody asked me to, it took me 4 months, I was binging, and I didn't have a sponsor. Oh, well, I kind of had one, but she was a school teacher, and I was a college student, and we had really different schedules, but we didn't really talk that much. And I wasn't working the steps. I'm so sorry. So somebody asked me to pick up the books at a meeting and bring them back the following week. And for whatever reason, like, I just knew I could do something different, you know? And I woke up on April 7th, and there was a, that's my abstinence date, April 7th, 2008. I woke up out of bed after a binge that next morning, probably so high on food, of course. And there was a big marker board on my back door, and I just woke up and I just said, enough. Like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I grabbed a Sharpie and I circled April 7th, and I was like, I'm done. And so I stopped binging. I stopped doing certain behaviors. I stopped eating all day long. It was because I kept coming back. I think I got abstinent because it was, you know, the gift that's given to me, and because I was willing to do the work. And then I got a sponsor. So I don't know how it works. It just, I hit bottom and I was done. So thank you for the question. Robin.
Who feels they recover, they have the capacity to be on the stage. Is that referring to sociopath? What is the capacity to be on the stage?
A good question. What do I tell somebody when they maybe don't have the capacity to be honest? Is that correct?
Many of them do recover.
Many of them do recover. They have the capacity to be honest. I don't know. I definitely have a sponsor right now who I adore. But she lied, you know, and I think that she can't get abstinent and stop doing her behaviors because she's unwilling to be honest. And I don't know why, but she just can't get it, you know. And so I was like, I hope you know this isn't what sponsorship is, you know. And I told her, I was like, I don't sponsor a food plan. I sponsor through the 12 steps. So when you want to work the 12 steps, call me. But I can't, you know, if you're going to lie to me, there's no relationship. So I'm just grateful I'm able to be honest. So I don't know. Thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing. It's great for you today. It sounds like from your share you've had a relationship with God prior to programming, or at least during camp periods. But has it changed over time in recovery?
Yeah, so it sounds like I came in with a God, and has it changed over time? Yeah, like, I definitely grew up with the Christian God and went to church camp and all of that. I just didn't think that God cared about my food and my body. And I thought I felt selfish for asking him for help in that area. So I just wouldn't. Today it's so different. It's like, I don't know what God is. Like, it's just this really great feeling I have. And I know, like, someone's got my back. And someone's always in my corner. And human, like I heard the other day, which is so true, it's what my sponsor told me when I came in, like, humans will always fail you, but God won't. Like, it's just that simple. And I also don't think that God is one thing. Like, I came in very naive, like, it's God in the sky. But God, for some people, might not be even that word. It could be higher power, a creator, or ocean, or I've heard dog before, you know, I don't care what it is. But it has changed, and it's not so limited anymore. And it's just, it's for me, it's like a feeling. But I do still believe in that God that I grew up with and respect him. And sometimes it's the same thing, and sometimes it's just a feeling. Thanks for the question. Any other questions? Okay, can we end? Oh, yes, I'm 15. Okay, thank you for letting me share.